right, let's turn in your Bible now to Psalm 63, please. Psalm 63. Got a little mini-series here called Psalms in the Key of Life. I actually stole that title, but it was so many years ago, I'm thinking nobody will notice. Psalms in the Key of Life, Psalm 63. We're going to look today at about verses 1 through 5, maybe 1 through 6. And let me tell you why. A little story. My wife and I were in a hotel on the Sea of Galilee, and we set our alarms on our phones to get up at 3 a.m., 2:50 a.m. actually, to watch the national championship. Unbeknownst to me, there were people on our trip to Israel that actually were Alabama fans. Had I known that, our trip would have been a lot smaller. But you never know when you start registering for a trip like this who's going to actually be playing. Nonetheless, we watched the national championship game with color commentary in Hebrew. This is problematic, to say the least. So I looked at the game as having somewhat of a biblical proportion to it, but I didn't expect that the Old Testament feel would come into the whole program. And whenever the American announcers were supposed to be on the screen listening to them speak in English, that we just got a blimp shot of the stadium, which we watched like continually through the night. So, to say the least, a little disappointed, a little nerve-wracking. But the interesting thing about it was the game went up right up to the time we needed to run over and get some breakfast and head straight over, walk straight over to the Sea of Galilee and eventually get on a boat to cross the Sea of Galilee, which is one of the highlights of the trip because it's a worship experience. It's usually a glorious thing. I say all that to say, I went from what would normally be a disappointing outcome to spending a couple days thinking about it and wish I had never watched any game this season and swearing that I won't watch another game and being like frustrated by the whole thing. Until eventually I'd realize what a stupid thing it is to actually be worried about it to begin with and get on with my life. This takes about 3 days. A lot of good things happen in 3 days, by the way. So on this particular event, it didn't take 3 days. It took less than an hour. Because when you're on a boat with worship music playing with 24 of your closest friends for a couple of weeks, and there are hundreds of birds on the water, and as the boat moves over the Sea of Galilee with the mountains in the background and you're thinking about Jesus and his ministry and the worship music is playing and then all the birds sort of just take off to the music and fly in unison together, you really aren't thinking about football. But what was I thinking about? I was thinking about something that I've been thinking about now for a while that you really don't have time to address during the holidays. And before that, I went on some extended trip across the world. You don't really have those opportunities. And what that trip on that boat was to me was a moment. And life is filled with many special moments. And these special moments give you clarity where you have hours of idleness and you don't get clarity. In moments, you can get clarity. I got clarity on that boat ride. What did I get clarity about? I finally was afforded the opportunity to slow down enough to forget about the travel problems we had, the busyness that we had to get to there. And I told everyone on the boat, my little devotion, I said, we're going to shift gears now and we're going to start asking the question, why are we here? Why are you on this trip? And how is it we're going to shift our gear into receiving and listening and worshiping and not the travel and not the absence of luggage for 4 days? Well, what did I get clear about in a moment's time? I got very clear about the fact that I have fell down to some extent on the job of providing, as a man, the proper spiritual leadership that I need to provide to those closest to me. This is not something that It happens often. It's an ebb and flow. It's a seasonal thing. And we go through this as men. We sometimes, with well-meaning hearts, we fall down a bit. We get lackadaisical. We get caught up in stuff. And that boat ride for me was like a stupid football game. It really, come on. But nonetheless, I didn't think about the rest of that game the rest of the day. I was focused now on the Lord. And who am I as a follower? And who am I as a leader? And I say that to you men here today. Have you, like me, compromised, shifted some responsibility, or allowed it to dwindle here and there in terms of praying over your wife and praying over your children and your grandchildren and standing your post as a watchman over your home? Are you acutely aware that you may just not be where you need to be? Or you may be very acutely aware that you are where you need to be, and we can thank God for that. But in the absence of condemnation, I draw the parallel now. How does one really succeed in this area consistently over time? And the answer, and I say this to the elders of the church too. Let's take it outside the home to the church. Are each of us as elders acutely aware of our responsibilities and the responsibility put upon us to cover this church in prayer? You know, as long as we're examining ourselves. It's not a bad question. Fact of the matter is, we decline and we come back, and circumstances sometimes in life will just blow us right out of the water, and all of a sudden we have a necessity to do certain things on a spiritual level that the circumstance has driven. The catastrophe or the tragedy or the illness has sparked a need in us to stand up, rise up, and be who we're called to be. The problem with that is the circumstance changes, and sometimes we dwindle back to where we started. You can jumpstart a car and get it going, but if the battery's not recharged, you're jumpstarting again, okay? Not looking for a jumpstart. I'm looking for that consistency. I need to get back to where I was in one sense, but so do you. Many of you need to get back to where you were in terms of your prayer life and your devotional life and praying over your family. But let's not measure where God's calling us based on getting back to where we were. Maybe it is that plus more. Where is God calling you going forward? That's a better question. Okay? So we look at this verse here, this Psalm 63. Written now, for those who are on the trip, you'll appreciate this. Written while David was being pursued in the Judean wilderness, a rocky, nasty, hot, arid place, and he's being pursued. Now, David was both a pursuer of God, but he was also pursued by other people. His knucklehead son, for one, and his knucklehead king he had, King Saul, too. People pursued him, but he also pursued God. And now he's in this wilderness. The Dead Sea is the lowest place on earth. I said to our group, we're at the Dead Sea. Every person you know, every person you'll ever know, every person you'll ever meet, every person you'll ever serve, every person you'll ever evangelize to right now is above you. Because we are at the lowest spot on earth. That's where David was. Literally, he's the lowest spot on earth in that wilderness, and he's writing this psalm. That's what's on his mind, and he's being pursued. And what does he say? Well, let me read it to you. And then we'll break it down. He says, oh God, oh God, oh God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. He says, my soul thirsts for you. What a cool thing to say to another. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you. In a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. So I've looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. Because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you. You, while I live, I will lift my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, because you have been my help. Therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. Let's break it down. Oh God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. I got to ask myself, what kind of man am I? What kind of man am I? What kind of man do I want to be? I want to be a guy who understands lowliness, understands humility, that has a reverence spirit about him. Don't you want to be that guy? Don't you want to be that woman to where you don't have all the answers? You don't have to have all the answers. You know, it might be just okay to say, here are three words a lot of people don't like saying, but nonetheless need to say, hey, here you go. I don't know. We don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to know everything. We don't have to sense everything, discern everything. Sometimes we just need to trust. He says, oh God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. Here's a guy who wanted to be the kind of man to his wife and to his family, to his people, that was possessed. You know, we talk about demon possession and all this stuff you see in the Bible, and not in the Bible. I've seen it around the world. We talk about that, but conversely, what do we talk about here? Are you a man? Are you a woman who's possessed by God? What does that mean? Inhabited by God, under the control of God. Moved by God, inspired by God, quickened by God, corrected by God, thrust into situations and confrontation by God. What kind of man are you? What kind of woman are you? Are you possessed? Do you possess a knowledge of God, or does he possess you? Does he own you? Has he purchased you? Is your life not your own? There's an element of truthfulness there, if we're really honest about it, that we as men and we as women, we as young people in the Lord need to have this spirit of, you know what? God is way up here and I'm way down here and he owns me, pretty much. Not pretty much, totally. So he starts out with, oh God, you are my God. I'll tell you, I was in downtown Jerusalem the other day, and it's the craziest place you've ever been. I mean to tell you, everybody's worshiping someone or something or some god. They dress different. They come from different places of the world. But I have never seen a place anywhere in the world where so many people are worshiping at the same time, praying over the call to prayer, praying before the call to prayer, praying during the call to prayer to Allah, to Yahweh, to Jesus, the Armenians, the Christian quarter, the Baha'i people. Man, that place is jacked up spiritually. Intense. Why? Because basically, whether you realize it or not, every person on the face of the earth, no matter how much they bury it under their pride or denial or problems or whatever else, wants to worship God. Because people aren't idiots. They understand they were created. No one came up with this. Come on. So everybody wants to worship God. But he says, you are my God. Man, this is a personal thing with him. Personal. Oh God, you are my God. Then he says this, early will I seek you. Wow, what's up with that? I got to tell you, this word early in Hebrew, shakar. It means earnestly, means to seek earnestly, to pursue after, like to get after it, man, to seek out. Hebrews 11:6 is an interesting one. God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. What he's saying is, I want you to earnestly, you're my personal God, and I earnestly seek you early. Why early? Does it matter what time of day? Probably not early. But what does it mean? It means early. It means if I got up early, I wouldn't be doing it late. If I got up early, I'd make it the start of my day. If I got up early, I'd make it the start of my life. It'd be the first thing on my mind. If I woke up early and I started to honor my God who possesses me, and I started to set apart and concentrate time for him, if I got on my Galilean boat where no other nonsense was cluttering my mind, and everyone was free, and the house was quiet, and the TV was off, and it was just me and a cup of coffee and the Bible, if that was it, and it was just me and my God, I want to be the kind of man that seeks him. Because it's in those moments of that early, diligent, earnest seeking that the whole rest of the day gets pulled into that vacuum and that vortex. In the absence of that, who really knows? Your life is but a mist, says John, as is mine, James 5. You don't know what's going to happen today or tomorrow. You're going to go here, you're going to go there. Nobody really knows. But I tell you what you do know is regardless of what happens at the end of the day, you were prepared to meet that challenge or to see the gratitude or the satisfaction in what happened because of the way you started it. Fundamentals. How do you get to the national championship? You practice the fundamentals over and over again. I want to be the kind of man that has a spiritual, foundational, fundamental. Early will I seek you. Diligently. I'm going to give you two words now, and they're not popular in this culture in the 21st century. The day will come, if things continue, when these words will be extinct. No one will know what they mean when you say them, and then eventually no one will say them. Here it is. Ready? Self-discipline. What? Come again? Self-discipline. Self-control. A fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5 and 22. I want to recheck where I'm at here in this little checkup. Is that me? Am I worshiping God or am I worshiping my God? Am I sitting here this morning acknowledging there is a God or am I personally connected with him in a relationship? Friend, those are two different things. Years ago, you could say this was a Christian nation, and you kind of hung around the USA long enough, it kind of like something kind of rubbed off on you that somehow or another you were some sort of believer of some kind. Well, we've taken care of that. That's out. I know we acknowledge God, but just here, man to man to woman, pastor to woman, hey, listen, is it your God? Oh, God. You are my God, early will I seek you. He says, my soul thirsts for you. This is probably the least understood aspect of what it means to follow God in your life as a man. We take as a man a mentality and an ideology and we place it on God and on ourselves and expect it of ourselves. But we fail miserably because we started out with the wrong ideology. The ideology is that I'm a guy, man. I'm going to go after God. I'm going to get this thing done. Yeah, you are. Okay, pal. You're going to fizzle out in about a month. How does my soul thirst for God after I conjure up all the things and all the things I put in my calendar and all the websites I go to and all the books I read and all the church services I go to, and I no longer want to long after him. I'm not panting after God. I've done all I can do. Now what do? Well, you quit what you were doing and you ask God for the desire for God. My soul thirsts for you. Christianity doesn't look appealing to people because they really can't see themselves actually following God because they know they're more honest, really, than the rest of us. They know they're going to fail miserably because, one, they have no desire to do. And you know what? We only really pursue what we have a desire to pursue. You only really go to the driving range if you want to win a tournament. If you just want to play golf like I do and hang out with people, laugh a little bit and go home, take a shower and go to dinner, I ain't going to no driving range. Kidding me? I'm not going to practice. So what? I'll just get my 50 and move on. Christianity is no different. We're going to do what we want to do. Question is, where's the want to come from? And the want to comes from God. Why? Because he's possessed by God. He's serving God. He's acknowledged God, and he's asked God to, hey, give me some desire for you. I saw some arranged Hebrew, Orthodox Hebrew dates the other day. Yikes. Two people sitting in a hotel lobby. Their parents had arranged the date, and they're talking to one another. And it's awkward. I mean, it's like there's no like quick silent pauses. There's like an hour and a half of pauses, and they're staring at each other, and they don't know what to say. And I can hear one of them in their mind. I can read their mind saying, oh, God, give me a desire for this person because I ain't got one. What do my parents see in this situation? My soul thirsts for you only because someone asked God for the desire to thirst after God. It's all part of the package. Go ahead and do it. First Bible study I ever went to was with was my closest friend at the time. His name was Jeff. We were, I got to tell you, the single two most ignorant, biblically ignorant people in the world. We knew nothing of the Bible. Our lips were full of profanity and disgusting nastiness. Our lives were so filthy, nasty, sickening is what it was. I have no idea how we got to a Bible study, but we did. You know what happened on the way home? We laughed our heads off. We don't even know why we were laughing. We were laughing. We said, can you believe we were at a Bible study? That was awesome, we said. That was awesome. That was incredible. We just laughed our heads off like we were drunk. And I think back, what was that? That was weird. God gave us a desire to be there. All we did is show up. He says, my soul thirsts for you. He says, my flesh longs for you. You know, physically, your spiritual life's like your physical life sometimes. You ever get a craving? Like, I gotta flat out have this. I went through this. We had a few pregnancies in our household. Red peppers, we went through the red pepper phase. It's 3 a.m., stores are closed, I need you to get a machine gun, go break into some store somewhere, get a red pepper, and get back here in 5 minutes. Yes, ma'am. Red peppers, I had never forgotten that. But sometimes, you know, you're just sitting there and you say, I gotta have it. Why do you want to have that? Why is it your body is telling you you got to have that? Because it gets from your flesh up to your mind, and it forms your mind that you have a deficiency in your body, and that thing you crave will actually meet that deficiency, and you'll be better. And you don't know what it is until your body tells you. It's a red pepper. Unfortunately for me, it's usually Ben and Jerry's. But spiritually speaking, that's the same way. Your soul and your flesh work together. And your emotions towards God come alive because your soul has a deficiency. Your soul has a deficiency, and your soul knows it, and God knows it, and you haven't informed your mind yet, and your body's getting on board with it, and all of a sudden you realize it's your body and how you eat, not unlike your spiritual life. How many people eat too fast? All right, I'm going to multiply that times 10 because I've seen you eat. Why do we eat so fast? I'm bad at this too. Why do we eat fast? What happens when you eat really fast? Your stomach doesn't let you know you're full until after it's too late. You would have been satisfied had you slowed down and eaten, but when you power drove that third cupcake, your stomach hadn't caught up to it to say, hey, dude, I'm full, back off. So you end up with this food hangover. Spiritually speaking, it's the same way. We try to power drive the Bible, grow spiritually in a fast way, worship, 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 read, 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 pray, 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 and your soul's going, dude, I was okay with 10 minutes. What's with the hour-long push-through? I'm just a little baby here. I'm a spiritual little baby. Just feed me a little bit of milk, will you? Right? We do that. So another reason we stall out is we try to take on too much, try to do too much. Because why? Because we're Americans, and that's what Americans do. Don't compare yourself. I hear this all the time. What? Don't compare or contrast yourself to someone else this year, guys. Wherever you are spiritually, feed yourself a little bit and eat slow. Digest, chew, think. It's not about quantity, it's about quality. You don't burn out that way. Your marriage doesn't go south that way. Your finances stay in order that way. Your perspective on life is balanced that way. Go slow. Eat a little bit. Chew a little bit. You and I should be spiritually grazing on God, not gorging on God. Grazing. Be like a cow. Be like a horse. Like, eat a little bit and then go eat a little bit more. Get rid of a little bit and eat a little bit more. That's what really a strong spiritual dynamic looks like in a man and a woman's life. Grazing. consistently grazing. Early will I seek you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. The reason the scripture says, as a deer pants for the water brooks, my soul longeth after thee, is because there's very little water down there. I'm going to tell you something. If you haven't, I'll save you a lot of pain if you really are unsatisfied with your life. I'll save you a little research, okay? And maybe some trauma. If you're unsatisfied with your life, maybe everything's going good. The business is really knocking it out of the park, and you have no real big issues to worry about, but you just left empty. I'm just unsatisfied. It ain't getting it. What's that about? You're drinking from a well that will not, now nor ever, truly satisfy you. And it's called the world. And Jesus come along one day and he says, whoever is thirsty, come unto me and I will give you living water. The world's water is not supposed to be spiritually satisfying. And that's why we're frustrated and longing for something more. And that's why we move from, as people, not you, in general, from relationship to relationship, from home to home, from city to city, from job to job. Nobody can settle down long enough to do anything long term. And we're left wanting and empty. We can't do it politically. We can't do it in the media. We can't do it in the family. We can't do it in the marketplace. It just, we're left not satisfied. And you're not satisfied, and I'm not going to be satisfied if I'm drinking from this well that the world has to offer. And the fact of the matter is, you need living water. He says, so I look to you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. He has an expectation that he's going to find God. Not literally in the Holy of Holies. He's not talking about that. He's down in the wilderness. He's a long way from the temple. What David is saying is, man, I look for you. I look for you in this set-apart way. I look for you in a consecrated way. I look for you where I can be with you and hang out with you, where nothing else invades us. I look for you in your sanctuary. I look for a place that I can meet with you, talk with you, apart from everything else going on in my life. I look for you in that place. I'm seeking you in that place. I'm thirsting for you in that place. I'm longing for you in that place. I just want that place. I'll take 5 minutes. Five is a long time if you eat slowly. I don't want to gorge myself on you. I just want you to reveal yourself. Just show me something. Teach me something. Touch some part of my mind. Give me a desire for you. I'm looking for you in a sanctuary somewhere. It could be in the middle of my business, in the middle of the day. It could be in the quiet of the morning. It could be the last 5 minutes. I'm just looking for you. I pray this when I come to this church, actually. I pray sometimes for that window within a service where somebody has a breakthrough. I look for you in your sanctuary to see your power and your glory. Because your loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise you. Loving kindness. It means zeal towards another. God has a zeal towards you. Can you believe it? He has a zeal towards me. I think his bar is too low. God has a zeal towards me. He has a zeal towards you. Loving kindness. And David says, my life and my lips will praise you. And he says, I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. I get a kick out of this lift up your hands thing in church. I don't get it, but that's okay. Why would someone lift their hands up? It seems very zealous. You know, hey, take a break, pal. Just do that at home kind of thing. Well, I need to know. I need to know that I can have God reveal himself to me in my own personal way that would give me a passion for him that would exceed that of an SEC football game. I see 75 to 100,000 people in a stadium at one time with their hands in the air, constantly yelling, screaming, singing, cheering, jumping, dancing, dressing up like God only knows what. And we're not anywhere close on, you know, showing some passion towards Jesus the Christ. Yeah, I'm going to lift my hands. When I lift my hands in prayer, I'll tell you what, I'm surrendering. Like, I'm getting healed up here. Like, I'm done. Got it. I lift my hands in prayer because it says in 1 Timothy 2 and 8, therefore I want men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands without wrath and dissension. It's an interesting verse. Therefore I want the men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands. We think it ends there. But it really doesn't. It doesn't end there because the rest of the sentence says, without wrath and dissension. In other words, no one cares. No one cares. It's not based on your background. It's based on the Bible. Psalm 134 and 2, lift up your hands to the sanctuary and bless the Lord. Praise him and surrender your life. My soul will be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. Your soul will be satisfied with the best, the choice, the tastiest, the fatness, the things that God really has for you, wants to serve you, that satisfy you. Not just satisfy you, but overflow out of you. That's what he's looking for. I come to the end of this next verse and I say, wow. He says, when I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. Someone gave me a book the other month. It's not unusual. I get a lot of books. Spurgeon's devotion called Morning and Evening. Why would a guy write a devotion called Morning and Evening when he could do half the work by just having a morning devotion? I'll tell you why. David says, early, earnestly will I seek you. There's something about the start of a day in a man and a woman who care enough about God to be personal to them and to possess their life and take them where he would have them to go. And there's something about a guy or a woman at the end of the day that will take a few minutes and say, you know what, that went pretty good, or wow, what'd you think about that day? The mind, your mind is created to actually process what's put into it before you go to bed. Did you know that it says this in Job, God speak to me even in my slumber. Before you go to sleep, if you fill your mind with truth, your mind will process that truth as you sleep. Some of us aren't sleeping for the absence of truth. Some of us are anxiety-ridden throughout the night for the absence of truth. He says, when I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. Because you have been my help, therefore in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. I say all that to say this. Let's take a check. Evaluate. For just a few minutes, you drove all the way over here. As a man, is it your God? Is it your friendship? Is your friendship with your God distinguishable from other people's friendship with God? Do you possess one that's unique to you that in turn gives you something to give to someone else that, by the way, they desperately not only want but need? Are you earnestly seeking him at the right pace? Chewing the food at the right pace, digesting what he gives you and not overdoing it, but asking him for a passion to do so? Do your lips praise him? This is going to hurt. Or do you lean more towards profanity? It's okay if it hurts. It's okay. Let it hurt. Let it hurt. Don't run from that. Let it hurt. Have you a little sanctuary time here and there. We've gotten away from that. Can your children, your spouse, and your grandchildren earnestly count on you to cover them in prayer as the patriarch of the family? As the matriarch of the family? Have we all, like sheep, gone astray in this area? Perhaps we can come on back. Amen? Perhaps we can come on back without condemnation. Come on back. Is there anyone here that needs to receive Jesus Christ? So that you have the my God thing? I hate God. Is there anyone here that you're only going to do this if he's moving on you? If he's not, don't. That's called a sham. Is there anyone here that needs that my relationship? Man to man, do you need that relationship? Do you need that desire for him? Do you need that peace and that satisfaction that eludes you? If so, stand up. Pray for you. I'm going to embarrass you. Anybody need to receive Christ? Stand up. Let's be the man he's called us to be. Let's be the woman he's called you to be.